gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Today is Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. And, well, there's a lot going on. There is the State of the Union. There's all sorts of other things. But today I am expecting to be joined by Jeremy from Kentucky. If you're out there, Jeremy, we're waiting for you to call in. And we're going to have a show about some issues of mutual concern. You know, on this is while we're waiting for Jeremy to call in, there is another interesting development. And so we have a new sponsor, and this is Co-Certified, because you might want to know what is kosher certified and what is not. And if you are an Orthodox Jew, and I know I have Orthodox Jewish listeners and friends, and you want to avoid food that is not certified as kosher, this is the app for you. Only $1.98. How can you go wrong? And if for any other reason you want to know what food is not certified as kosher, yeah, sure. It's good for you, too. It is available on the Google App Store. It was available on iTunes until just maybe a couple hours after I announced it, that was my new sponsor. Quite a coincidence. I'm not sure why that would have happened at that time. But we'll see. At any rate, it's a great app. And especially, you know, if you want to keep kosher and you want to avoid food that's not kosher, it's a great app for you. Jeremy from Kentucky, are you there?
I'm here, doctor. Can you hear me all right?
I'm here. So we are going to talk about some issues of mutual interest. And I think we might start off talking about, I mean, there's a variety of issues we have of mutual interest, but I think we were going to talk at first about the role and the impact of various Christian beliefs on, say, white nationalism. Now, this is not a religious show, and I'm not even a religious person, so it's not really a matter of looking at the theology and saying what's right and what's not right, but maybe taking kind of an objective view, an objective look at what types of, you know, theological ideas, how they may interplay with the other ideas that we talk about on this show. Does that sound good?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, Christianity does play a role in our politics. I mean, Trump would not have gotten the Republican nomination if it weren't for a lot of the evangelicals supporting him. So, yeah,
and he wasn't necessarily he wasn't necessarily their first choice. So here's my first question to you, because Trump was never an overtly religious person. I'm not saying he's not a religious person, but it wasn't overt the way, say, Ted Cruz. When Ted Cruz would make a speech, he would talk about the tax code, and it'd say it's you know, 20,000 pages. It's twice as long as the Bible, or it's got twice as many words as the Bible, and not a single one as good. You know, he would wear it on his sleeve, kind of in a creepy way, I always thought. But, you know, there's a lot of other Republican politicians who are much more overt about Christianity. And Trump, on the other hand, you know, he would talk about, what was it? The book of, what was it? Not Kings or not Chronicles.
One Corinthians, was that?
Corinthians, yeah, not Chronicles, Corinthians. Yeah. And sound a little bit unfamiliar with certain aspects of it. But you're correct. Certainly in the general election, and probably later in the, you know, they didn't rally against him when it was coming down to a race between him and Cruz. And they did rally behind him in the election, for sure.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, there was a big split in the Christian community during the primaries. Now, I'm gauging this off of about 1,500 people that I had on social media that I interacted with in that year, or in the, you know, between the time that Trump announced his presidency and the Republican primary. And then I'm also gauging this off of a lot of articles that I've read. There was a big split, because the thing with Cruz is he was a little too fake looking, and when you researched him, he was a part of this movement called Dominionism, where it's basically a fascist form of Christianity, where you're going to
set up. So tell us about Dominionism, because I'm not familiar with that.
In a nutshell, Ted Cruz's father is a Dominionist, and basically you're going to overtake government and then eventually the world through the church is the basic of the movement. But what a lot of Christians found disturbing, me in particular, and this might actually get into how I got out of Zionist Christianity too, because all this was kind of happening in order. I was getting out of Zionist Christianity as Trump was announcing his candidacy, and I was doing all this research. So in Christian prophecy, you know, the devil is moving us toward a one world government, globalism, new world order. All of that is in Christian prophecy. And so Cruz and Heidi Cruz was a part of this movement to make, you know, North America, Mexico, and Canada this North American union. And that plus his father's dominion.
Well, she's working for Goldman Sachs, correct?
She was, but before Goldman Sachs, she was in the Council on Foreign Relations. Mm-hmm. And that's something, if you really dug, you could find that. And it's evidence out there. And I believe actually Dr. Duke had turned me on to a lot of that, getting to digging into that and researching. So in other words, Ted Cruz is just a globalist by another name, and so a lot of us didn't trust him. But you're right, you know, Trump had a lot of moral issues that it took Christians a long time to get over. But as the Republican primary dwindled down, you know, he did get a lot more evangelical support than he had opposition from. I mean, really, that's what he needed to get the Republican nomination. I think he did play that up a lot, too. But basically, we saw Trump as an outsider, as someone who will punch the bully in the nose, and we just didn't care that he had these different wives and that he was involved in these scandals, and he was a womanizer. I mean, we saw him as an opportunity to stand up to the one world government, and that's kind of what mainstream Christianity saw. I was waking up just prior to this, and I began to see how the Bible predicted that we would move towards what they call a new Babylon headed by the Antichrist, and how this is going to be like a throwback to the old Babylon. You can read about in Genesis 10 and 11, where everyone was of one race and of one under one government. But see, God divided that, and he divided them up into nations. And the word nation means a race. In the Old Testament, it's Goyim. In the New Testament, Greek, it's ethnos. And so what I saw then clearly was that the world was moving towards this race mixing and blending us all into one big system. And so I began to put that together with what I was hearing from Dr. Duke and Stormfront, and I sort of stepped away and reevaluated my view of the Bible and took on a more orthodox Christian view of like the pre 20th century Christian view. And that's how I came to see the Jews as well. I sort of saw them as older, you know, Christians from over 100 years ago would see them as the ones that stood against Jesus Christ. And even the first Christians who were Jewish, you know, the Jewish establishment put them to death through the Roman government. The Romans didn't care. It was always the Jewish synagogues that reached out and, like, persecuted Paul and Barnabas and Stephen. And so I began to see that very clearly, and that helped me move out of Zionist Christian view and into a more traditional Christian view.
Okay, so like I said, I'm not a religious person. That's not the same as being an atheist, because an atheist is telling you that God doesn't exist, and I'm not saying that. I'm just not taking a position on it. As you know, Jeremy, I do study the Bible, but not. As a religious person would study it. I study it because I think it is probably, I shouldn't even say probably, it's definitely the most important text in the history of humanity. And therefore, if you want to understand world affairs, you should certainly study this important text that so many people look at as divine word, whether or not I think it's divine word. It's extremely important. So, and of course, different people have different views on it. Now, you mentioned Christian prophecy. Of course, different people have different views on what Christian prophecy is, don't they? I mean, people who read the Scofield Reference Bible would probably have a different view on what that prophecy is, wouldn't they?
That's correct, and you brought up an awesome topic that I want to touch on. It's called dispensationalism. Basically, this is a systematic theology, and all that means is a way to divide up the Bible and study it. Ecclesiology is the study of the church. Soteriology is the study of salvation. Well, eschatology is the study of prophecy. Mm-hmm. Dispensational theory is not bad in and of itself. It was actually originated with John Darby. He was a British minister who moved to Ireland and started the Plymouth Brethren movement, which still is going on, and it's a great little church. Darby was not a Zionist. Darby simply acknowledged that you have to look at the Bible differently through different periods of history. God deals differently with human beings. In the Old Testament, he said stone homosexuals and adulterers. But in the church, 1 Corinthians 5 says you simply just excommunicate them if they won't change their ways. So here we have God looking the same way about these issues, but he's telling humanity to deal with them differently. And that's kind of how we're viewing prophecy. And Scofield was a total Zionist. He totally ruined dispensationalism. That's about the time, the late 19th century, early 20th century, when the church was being infected with it. And Scofield's whole position was, well, the Jews are being regathered for God's blessing. And so we should, like, bless them and be good to them. But in actuality, what they're totally missing is lots of prophecies that talk about the Jews being regathered for God's punishment. Zephaniah 2 is a perfect example of that. It says, gather yourselves together, O undesirable nation, before the decree is issued or the day passes like chaff, before the Lord's fierce anger comes upon you, before the day of the Lord's anger comes upon you. So here's the Jews being gathered together for God to pour his anger out on them. And this is, I believe, what we're seeing in the 20th century with the World Jewish Congress, with the Balfour Declaration, with the Jews affecting the UN Declaration of Israel being a state. These are the Jews, like, using political, global politics and bankers to get themselves in a position to take their land by force and just ethnically cleanse the people that are on there. This prophecy is dealing with them being gathered for the Lord's anger. Mm-hmm. As you pointed out, different people are going to see these prophecies differently. The church before dispensationalism didn't understand the future prophecies, and they just thought that they were happening at the time. But that left a lot of loose ends to be, you know, untied when you viewed it like that. A lot of the prophecies in the Bible that deal with the Antichrist and the one world government, they have to be future because nothing like that's ever happened yet. Even the Roman Empire didn't encompass the whole earth.
Yeah, and I have to admit that my study of the Bible, I'm just reading through the Old Testament, and I haven't even, I mean, I've studied the New Testament previously in college courses, but I'm sure this is not the best way to study the Bible, but to just read it from cover to cover. But the prophecy tends to be at the end of the, I guess, in Revelation, and I haven't gotten there yet. So don't spoil it. Don't spoil it for me.
Right.
No.
Right. Well, the devil did it. But okay. But as you mentioned, you know, the Bible is a very important text, whether you believe in divine inspiration or not. I mean, it has over 5,000 copies of the Byzantium New Testament text that back it up, as well as the Greek translation of the Old Testament, which is called the Septuagint. That was done in 250 BC. And then you have, like, Dead Sea Scrolls, where you find a lot of original Hebrew chapters of and whole books of the Old Testament. So it's a book that has to be contended with.
Oh, yeah. It's old. It's got a lot of prestige by having, you know, not just Christian. I mean, even Muslims revere it as a, you know, Old and New Testament as scripture. Sikhs even. Lots of, probably about half of humanity looks at it as scripture. So it's certainly important. Now, here we are in the early 20th century, and at least in the United States, we have this Christian Zionism that has hijacked, and I'm using the word hijacked, I know there's a value judgment in my use of that word, but it's hijacked a big hunk of Christianity, a big hunk of evangelical Christianity. If you were to go back 100 years ago, or a little more than 100 years ago, maybe to around 1900, the ideas that we associate with Christian Zionism, and of course the State of Israel didn't exist at the time, but Jews existed, and the place that Jews as a people have, not to mention Israel as a nation state, has now occupies in the imagination of Christian Zionists, to what extent was that even a thing 100 years ago?
Well, it's traditional Christian views, and you can get this if you read Martin Luther's The Jews and Their Lies. I don't agree with the Reformers or all of their theologies, but that is a pretty good book. But anyway, what they saw was that the Jewish establishment stood against Jesus Christ. And a lot of the Jewish establishment, like the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they wanted to do it their way because they had a control over the money and the power over the people. And their way was later incorporated into what's called the Talmud. And this is the Mishnah, which is like the rabbinical interpretation of the Old Testament. It's actually a rabbinical, skewed view of the Old Testament. So all the views in the Talmud existed when Jesus walked the earth, but it was in a lot of written and oral tradition. Jesus was saying, no, you can't go by their laws, their man-made laws. You have, Jesus' message was that he was the way to the Father, and that he was going to die on the cross for our sins and be resurrected, because we can't do any good work to earn God's forgiveness. It's only through Jesus. Well, the Pharisees were like, no, you've got to follow us and do it our way. So there was a big split there, and that's why they had him put to death. And of course, by faith, I believe he rose again. But the early Christians saw the Jews as standing against Jesus, and when they finally did read the Talmud, when the Jews were intermingling with Europeans, they saw the wicked and evil things in there and how anti-Christian it was, and so they pushed the Jews out of their communities. And so, before Zionism became a thing, Jews were just looked at as, hey, these are still the people that rejected Jesus and persecuted the first church. Dispensationalism, though, how Darby looked at it, John Darby would say, well, God's not dealing with the Jews in Israel right now. God is dealing with the church. He would be one that would believe that the church has replaced Israel or the Jews, and that's called replacement theology. But Darby went a step further and said, well, there are prophets where Israel will be restored in the distant future, and he believed that too. And that's kind of where I stand. But the current state of the Jews that we see right now is one of judgment. They're in wickedness and Christ rejection, and they're being slated for judgment. So that's kind of how the Old Testament, or Christians from over 100 years ago, were replacement theologists. They believed that Israel was totally replaced by the church, and that the Jews were irrelevant and just anti-Christian.
Okay, well, we are coming up on our first break, but I've got some more questions for you about maybe what would be considered more mainstream Protestants when we come back from the break.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER, stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation, and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio.
A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Show. This is National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery and Jeremy from Kentucky. And today I invited Jeremy on because I have a lot of questions. I know different people who study Christianity, who study the Bible, have different views. But I know Jeremy's somebody who makes a serious study of it, and I had some questions for him. I'm going to continue with my questioning. And we were talking about evangelicals in the first segment, and they are, they're Zionist-occupied territory. Well, not all of them, but this Christian Zionism is kind of a Zionist-occupied territory. But also you have the more mainstream Protestant groups. I think of when I went down to Charlottesville. And I was walking around with Black Lives Matter, and there were these Christian clergymen, and they were wearing these—I don't know what you call them—but around their robes there were these sashes, not sashes, what kind of like scarves that go around. I don't know what they're called. I should know these things, but I don't. Rainbow colored, and they were all rainbow. They were all Black Lives Matter, and. You know, we can get to the Catholic Church later, but these mainstream Protestant denominations that are, to the extent that liberals go to church, they would go to these churches, and they've been kind of incorporated into this, multi-faith networks, or if that's what they're called, these, multi-faith networks. And they're kind of occupied territory, too. To what extent do you have interaction with these types of people?
As little as possible, because they really disgust me. I just wish they would come out and say we're liberal homo lovers instead of cloaking it behind Christianity, which for, over a millennia stood against such atrocities. Here's the thing. When Zionism crept into the church, it just opened the door for all kind of egalitarian nonsense. The Bible is not egalitarian. They try to take Galatians 3, which says there is no difference between the Jew or Greek in Christ, and they try to take that and run with it and make it an egalitarian base. But if you read the whole chapter, it says in Christ, and it also says male or female, free or slave. This does not race ethnic lines, nor does it race lines between the genders. What it does, if you read it all in context, it's just saying that before God, we're all sinners, and before God, we can all come to Jesus Christ. But Paul even goes on to say in the New Testament that there are roles for male and female. There are roles for ethnicities. And there's a difference in the nations, Acts 17:26. He says that they were given boundaries. Ethnic groups were given boundaries. So this is basically Marxist, cultural Marxism in the church. And, well, let's just accept, you know, all types of homosexual lifestyles and degeneracies. And I'm going to single out the Episcopalians. That's probably what you're seeing. They still wear the robes. It's just to go back to Catholicism is all it is for the robe part. But they elected, like, one of the first homosexual bishops. So it's just real. It's just a cancer that just keeps eating.
And so with, correct me if I'm wrong, but with Christian Zionism, you can kind of trace this back to the Scofield Reference Bible, and you know the history better than I do. But with these mainstream Protestants, how did this come about? Do you know?
Yeah, well, what they're doing is there's two different prophecies. There's a prophecy of the regathering of Israel in wickedness for judgment, and then there's a prophecy of them regathering to be restored, like way down the line, and they're confusing these two. They think that what they're seeing right now in Israel are the Jews being regathered as God's people for a blessing, but that is certainly not it. And you can just look at the history of the Bolshevik Revolution, all the communist activities, all the terrible, you know, Jews up in capitalism that oppress us, the way they've taken over our government and media and banking, and you can see that they're acting very wickedly right now. And they're standing for the most degenerate policies for us.
Okay, I have another question, and it starts off with kind of like a silly point I want to make. I last autumn went to a black church at the invitation of a friend of mine for one of their events, and the preacher was talking about how everybody was going to be going to heaven. All these people at the church were going to go to heaven. But then he said that the dogs weren't going to heaven. And I thought, and I joked to myself, I thought, what, I'm going to have to spend all of eternity with all these black people and I don't get to bring my dog? can Mr. T come to heaven with me?
Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Slattery, the Bible says in Ecclesiastes that the spirit of an animal goes into the ground, but... there will be animals in the recreated earth, according to Isaiah 11, the book of Revelation. So there will be animals there, and I can't see why there wouldn't be dogs.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll be Mr. T, but certainly one like him.
Well, anyway, I mean, I'm being a little bit silly there, but and we will be coming up on the break soon, but I want to get to black evangelicals. Do you know, on the Daily Shoah, this alt-right podcast, they had this Jesse Lee Peterson on to talk about some issues. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not. He had very particular ideas about love and things like that. So after the break, I'd like you to maybe address black Christianity for a little bit.
Will do.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
I didn't think to have to go on tonight. Hava Nagila, this is Patrick Slattery on National Bugle Radio with Jeremy from Kentucky. And we've been talking about Christianity, its role and impact in our movement. And I know it's a controversial topic, and we can take callers. I know you're willing to take callers, Jeremy. So if you want to call in, the number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. But before I take callers, I do have a couple more questions. So I had asked you about, I do want to say, I was talking to my dog over the break, and I promised him I'm not going anywhere without him. So, but regarding the black churches, I don't know how tuned in you are to them, or to Jesse Lee Peterson, or to other black Christian leaders. Do you have a gauge on where they are with this whole, Zionist occupation movement?
Well, I mean, Jesse Lee Peterson, I know about him. I know he's a big Sean Hannity buddy, and he's what we would call a based black Trump supporter guy. He does try to stand against Jesse Jackson. What I do admire about Peterson is he actually advocates for African-American rights, not that they need it, but I'm just saying that, he tries to stand up for his own people, and he stands against immigration from the point of view of, well, these immigrants are going to come in here and take away all of our advantages, which they are. Mm-hmm. It's true. So, I mean, I don't know what he believes. Like, I don't know his doctrine, so I can't say that I agree with him on his religious doctrine, but he's a base black guy. Now, as far as the black church in general, a lot of blacks came into the Christian church in the early 20th century in the Azusa Street Revival. This is where Pentecostalism was born. And basically, let me just nutshell it, African voodoo nonsense was brought into Christianity and combined together with Christian views, and there you have Pentecostalism. And it's a whole lot of, speaking in gibberish and laying on the floor and shaking and just all of this nonsense that they did in their voodoo religion. And then unfortunately, that spilled over into some, you know, white European Christian churches, and they adopted some of that too, and now there's a mixture. But overall, most blacks are among the Pentecostals, not all of them. And there's a lot of totally based black people in the Christian church that would vote for Trump and be against immigration, you know, illegal immigration. But I think the majority of them are just, it's just unfortunate because Marxist ideas just appeal to the majority of blacks and Mexican Americans, and they're just swayed by that, and they vote overwhelmingly for the left. And it's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. That's the majority of them in churches. The churches are, the black churches are majority Marxist mentality.
And when I have attended a few events that were sponsored by, I can't remember the exact term. It's like, you know, multi-faith coalitions, multi-faith networks. And the black churches tend to be represented by, what is it? It is African Methodist, what is it? AMC, African Methodist Congregationalist, or something like that. Some black denomination. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. I was just wondering if you were familiar with it, if it is, you know, if there's any reason why these Jewish-dominated multi-faith networks tend to cooperate with them so much. Otherwise,
in order to use them as a proletarian group, I mean, basically that's all they're doing to them, trying to give them a false sense of egalitarianism through their religion.
Then of course, I guess the big gorilla in the room would be the Catholic Church, which is worldwide. It's, you know, it's the bulk of Christianity worldwide, the biggest single denomination, if you want to call it a denomination. And what do you make of the, you know, it's the first time in some 600 or 700 years that a pope resigned. What do you make of the resignation of Benedict and his replacement by, I want to say Francisco, that's not it, Francis, who seems to be a cultural Marxist? What do you make of this?
Well, I mean, we've seen the decline of the Catholic Church in the mid-20th century. And even though it was always been somewhat, there's been a lot of corruption and power there, and I don't want to offend any Catholics. I know there's a lot of great people, you know, there are good people in there in the Catholic Church, but the church itself has had a lot of corruption in the past. But in the 20th century, it started, like, at least in the past, it stood for, you know, good Christian morals, and now it's been infiltrated by, as you said, cultural Marxism, and the leadership is starting to show that, and the church is going soft on everything that it stood against, like abortion and homosexuality, in the past. Now they're going soft. It's just another means of corrupting Christianity, because when true Christianity declines, then, you know, Zionist power and cultural Marxist power, it becomes on the rise. And, you know, you see an example of that in the French Revolution, where the churches were turned into the centers of reason, homosexuality was decriminalized, and Talmudic Judaism was a recognized religion. That was the result of the French Revolution. Because so they always attack the church because, you know, Talmudic Judaism is anti-Christian and anti-church.
So, I mean, I'm not somebody who grew up in the Catholic Church. I have lots of Catholic relatives, and to the extent that I've had interaction with organized religion, it's been more through the Catholic Church. And to me, but I'm still basically an outsider. And from my perspective, it seemed as if you had a Jewish-led push, certainly in the media, but beyond the media, that was using pedophilia, or, you know, the pedophile church, the pedophile priests, as a means of gaining control over the institution as a whole. And, you know, of course, if you have a clergy that's not allowed to marry, it's going to, there's, higher entry cost, to use political science or social science terms, there's a higher entry cost to a heterosexual to agree to a life of celibacy than, or especially, well, not a life of celibacy so much, but agree to never marrying. There's a higher entry cost to a heterosexual than a homosexual. And so, you know, it's not a surprise that that you had maybe a disproportional amount of homosexuals who are more prone to pedophilia in the Catholic clergy as opposed to Protestant clergies or to the society at large. But it seemed that this was used as a weapon by a largely Jewish-dominated media offensive in order to gain control over the Catholic Church. Do you think my reading is correct, or is there more to it than that?
I think you're spot on. You got an attack from the outside, because the Jews always did view the Catholic Church as anti-Semitic because it stood against them, you know, in the past. And then you have an attack, an infiltration from the inside. And they did the same thing with the Protestants, you know. They attacked it from the outside with vicious policies, and then they infiltrated it from the inside with Zionism.
Okay. Now, my next question is, we're kind of moving on to different aspects of organized Christianity. One thing that has struck me, and I am a relative newcomer to this white nationalist movement, but one thing that has struck me is the relatively high proportion of people who identify with Orthodox Christianity, Russian Orthodox, I suppose, but also maybe Greek Orthodox. Why is Orthodox Christianity as appealing as it is to white nationalists?
Well, I too am very new to this movement, I would say in the last 2.5 years, and I studied a lot on the different Christian expressions in white nationalism. Russian Orthodox, your two main ones are Russian Orthodox and Christian Identity. Now, Russian Orthodox is basically Greek Orthodox, and you can trace their movement back to this Apostle Andrew, who spread Christianity into the Ukraine eventually, and then that spread up into Russia. But because that's appealing because it holds the traditionalist view that the church has replaced Israel. That's the view of the Russian Orthodox and the Greek Orthodox and Christianity in general. And I think where Christian Identity comes in is that a lot of Christians in the movement, they have to do something with the Old Testament. They have to contend with who are the Jews in Israel in the Old Testament. And there's a lot of passages that do connect the Jews with Israel. Esther chapter 2 is one of them that connects these two as the same. And you've got to deal with that, because in the Old Testament, Israel is the hero, right? So I think the Christian Identity view then is that Israel and the Old Testament are the European Christians of today, and that the Jews are a separate people. And then there's even different
views amongst Christians. Not just figuratively, but genetically, right?
Exactly, and unfortunately, I found a lot of Christian Identity do hold to the Khazar theory. Now, I'm not attacking people who are Christian Identity, and I'm not attacking the religion itself, but what I can do is I could attack the Khazar theory on a scientific basis, and Dr. Mm-hmm. Duke wrote a great article called Rethinking the Khazarian Theory, mm-hmm. And there's over 12 DNA studies done, you know, that prove that the different Ashkenazi Jews and Sephardic Jews, they all belong to the same haplogroup, have common Y chromosomes. And then, you know, archaeologically, the Khazar theory has an issue too. But I think that theory was basically proposed by a communist Jew to try to take the heat off of Jews and say, oh, it's not us, Goy, it's these other Khazarian Turkish people.
Arthur Koestler. And I don't know if it was originally proposed by him, but it was certainly popularized by him. And he may have had his motives. He may have believed it, too. But please continue. I'll talk about it in a little bit. Please continue.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm openly honest here. My views are biased. My views are subjective to the Bible, and that's because that's what I've chosen to do. But I can step outside of my views and objectively look at things and take different facts in consideration and different views, and that's how I came out of Christian Zionism, by doing that. So I want to, you know, when I choose what religious, what way I want to express Christianity and white nationalism, I had to do the same thing. I had to view, get the different points of view. And that's the one problem that I have with the, some of the Christian identity views is that they hold to the Khazar theory, but not all of them. Some of them, there's a lot of differences within Christian identity, and you'll get people fighting mad over each other as to whose view is right, as to who the Jews are. Some say the Jews come from fallen angels and women in Genesis 6. Some say the Jews come from Esau rather than Jacob. And then some say the Jews are the southern tribe of Judah and the Europeans are the northern tribe, the northern kingdom of Israel. So lots of different views that I found really fascinating. And I did familiarize myself with Willie Martin and his Christian identity views. And I found that he did kind of hold to the Khazarian theory as well. Because one of your callers had told me to look at that book. I didn't read it all. I just kind of got the cliff notes on it. But yeah, your original question is why Orthodoxy appeals to white nationalists because of their view of the Jews and who the Jews were and are now.
Okay. Now, this Khazarian theory, it's been out there, and it has appealed to, I mean, it has a natural appeal to certain groups, not just to, say, Christian identity people, but it has an ideal to appeal to certain groups because it confirms a bias that they already have or beliefs that they already have. It tends to confirm them. And so you mentioned Christian identity. To people who are, say, in the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, you know, these are people who tend to be leftists. A lot of them wanted to latch on to it because Jews, Zionist Jews, say they are returning to the land of their ancestors and that, you know, because God gave them a right to this land and they're the descendant of the Jews in the Bible, then it belongs to them. And it's a little bit illogical in a way because these leftists are more secular. And why would they care whether or not God gave a particular land to a particular people? And yet, the this Khazarian theory has a lot of currency among them, especially maybe among a lot of the Palestinians themselves who aren't so secular. But it's, you know, it would indicate that they're not the descendants of the Hebrews of the Bible. And yet, you mentioned these studies. It does seem, the more and more we learn about genetics, it does seem that they are descended from the Jews of the Bible. They might not be the only descendants of the Jews of the Bible, because you see a lot of these same haplogroups in Palestinians, in Lebanese, in the Assyrian Christian community in Syria, who speak the language of Jesus, who speak Aramaic, have these same haplogroups. So probably the Jews of the Bible have descendants who are both Jewish and non-Jewish. That would make perfect sense. But also linguistically, why would you have if the Ashkenazis were Turkic, why would they be surrounded by a sea of Slavs and speaking a Germanic language? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Well, we do have a caller. Shall we take a caller, Jeremy?
At your whim, sir.
Okay, let's bring on Mike from Kentucky. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, it is pretty amazing that after 2,000 years, there's some Aramaic that is still somewhat original to the Aramaic of 2,000 years ago. And I think it was pretty amazing that after the flood of Noah, about 2,000 years later, there were still those that were perfect in their generations. And I think that's part of the reason that Yeshua came when he did, because if he'd waited much longer, then the intermingling between the Edomites and the southern kingdom of Judah would have been enough to where his genealogy could be placed in a lot of doubt. And, of course, the Talmudic people do say that he was a product of rape by a Roman centurion and all kinds of dastardly stuff. But what I called about was I think the Old Testament covenant purpose was fulfilled And have you looked at the Bible with audience relevance for who was being spoken to in that culture in that day?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I have not, but that's that. We're not directly. I mean, but I do think it's important. The audience. I mean, I've thought of it in terms of the audience when people are discussing, biblical relevance to science.
There goes a break. I think we're in a break.
Okay, well, stay on, Mike, and we'll get to you during the break. After the break.
White people of European descent comprise 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Welcome back to the show for our final few minutes. And Mike from Kentucky was asking, he raised some points, many of which are above my pay grade. I'm not qualified.
let me give you an example or two here. When he tells the disciples, you will not finish going through all the towns of Judea before the Son of Man comes, and you look at it that way, it only increases the credibility of the story. You know, because R.C. Sproul, I think, before he passed away, gave some hints at how this hurt the credibility of Christianity among people that think, and makes it hard to do the Great Commission for people that say that obviously he wasn't a prophet because some of the stuff he said did not come true. But when you look at it as if you were there and being spoken to, and the events that happened within that generation, and earthquakes, there was an earthquake that destroyed the church at Corinth. So you have to imagine, what those people thought of, and there were people that looked around and saw the temple, all the Pharisees and the money changers all just picked right up, dusted themselves off, and went on like nothing happened. And there was, I think, Philetus said, look, all things continue as before. But that only was true for the next 40 years, which is the what Hebrews 3 says is a generation, and then boom, the temple was destroyed, the genealogies were destroyed. Mm-hmm. There's no indication that the ark was even there anyway. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what happened to the ark, but all of those elements of the faith were melted down with fervent heat. And I just found out a few years ago that the inner rooms were called the heavens and earth, because mm-hmm. that's where God came down and accepted the sacrifice four times in a year.
Okay.
So that was that heavens and earth.
Weigh in on this.
Okay. Heavens and earth will pass away, but my words will not. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a lot, Mike. I'm going to try to be quick. Yeshua, for the audience, is the name of Jesus in Hebrew. It was later translated. It was written in Greek in the New Testament, which in English it becomes Jesus. But anyway, yeah, Mike is making the point that before the flood you had an intermingling of fallen angels and women, and that the generations were corrupted, and so God destroyed the earth and saved Noah and his sons and their wives, and that this helped to keep the lineage of the coming Messiah, Yeshua, or Jesus, as others might know him, to be pure. And then he was bringing up the point that some of the things that Jesus said were misinterpreted and misread by Christians in the past. When he said, "You will not go through Judea before you see the Son of Man," what I took that as is the transfiguration. At the transfiguration, you can look up in the New Testaments, Jesus took his veil off temporarily, and they could see him in all of his glory. And so that's what I take it as what he meant by the disciples wouldn't finish their mission until they see him in his glory. Because three of them actually did get to see him like that.
I think that's only a very few days after he said that, so it wasn't much of a prediction. You know, it wasn't much of a prediction to say that would occur in just a few days.
He's not saying... Yeah, I just didn't take it as him saying that it would be his second coming, but actually, while he was there on earth, him showing his glory to them. That's just how I took it, but I didn't want
to... You're familiar with the school of thought that I'm talking about here, where, you know, he's basically... The word generation can be interpreted in the New Testament by letting Scripture interpret itself. There's all these versions of at hand, you know. This is at hand, and Paul preached it, kingdom is at hand. All righty.
The end of the show is at hand. I hear our bugle call. And are the walls going to come tumbling down? We'll find out. But I want to thank you, Mike, for your call. And
sure.
Jeremy from Kentucky, thank you for letting me interview you this past hour. I hope we get to do it again, because we have other issues of concern in common. So... let's do it again sometime. And
sir,
please stay tuned to RBN, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.